Welcome back to your Valley Sports Plug. It is Tuesday, March 4th, 2025. I'm your host, Chris Patrick, and we are live, baby. If you're looking at the thumbnail, this was supposed to be a round table, but the table got cut in half, and then it got cut in half again. So now it's more of just a one-on-one meeting here between me and my co-host, VSP Tallman. What's going on, man? Happy to have you here.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about bailing, but, you know, didn't want it to be a one-man show. I'm just kidding. It's another
I've done it before. I'll do it again. Right.
Just over here, just riffing solo. But another beautiful Tuesday. And, of course, right when we started, my washing machine is on the spin cycle, so it's loud as hell. Hopefully you can't hear that. But, yeah, let's do this.
Hell yeah. And I've done the solo stream, called it Rants Off the Top. Love to do it again someday because it's kind of fun. I think we should adopt that model for this stream where we just pull up articles, talk about shit. We look at the comments if anyone tunes in while we're live. And anyone who does tune in while we're live, make sure you like and subscribe. Hell, even if you're watching back on the replay and you're on YouTube, like and subscribe to our channel. Really helps us out. You also want to go and follow us at AZ_VSP on Instagram, X, TikTok, Threads, anywhere you have social media. Valley Sports Plug is probably there. Just slap Valley Sports Plug into the Google machine, into your favorite AI chatbot, and they'll steer you in the right direction. Oh, man. Yeah, and then on the playback, of course, this podcast is always up the next day on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere that you can find podcasts. But enough of my spiel. Let's go ahead and get into it. Man, yeah, so a lot of doom and gloom in the Valley waiting for baseball to start. We got the Suns that are kind of continuing their downward spiral. We have the Cardinals report card that came out where they're dog shit and everything except coaching pretty much. And yeah, I mean, let's just start right at the top. I mean, what do you think? I know you literally said right before we launched that you don't want to talk about the Suns, but I think we need to talk about the Suns.
Well, it's the same shit over and over again. It's the definition of insanity, man. It just never stops. And this season has just been a total disappointment, but I digress. Let's go. Let's talk about the Suns.
Hell yeah. So I was trying to find it here, the specific tweet, I guess you could say. This might be close enough because I don't want to butcher it. I want to get and maybe not say just the gist or whatnot. But Chris Haynes reported Friday that Budenholzer told Devin Booker to tone it down being vocal. And I think that was specifically in regards to like timeouts and in the locker room, where he basically was saying, let the coaches coach and you worry about playing and I'll coach you guys up in the huddle and in the timeouts. I kind of get where he's coming from. I mean, you want the coaches to be heard. They have a plan in place for a reason, but at the same time, Devin Booker is the leader of the team, or at least you want him to be the leader of the team. It's not uncommon that we've seen guys sit down with a clipboard and, you know, LeBron's done it, Pat Bev, all sorts of people have done it regardless. I guess it depends on how much. Tom, before we get into that, we got the man, the myth, the legend, Michael Benjamin, moderator in the chat, the GOATs. Glad to have you here, buddy. Mike, if anyone is wondering where Mike is tonight, he is going to subject himself to having to watch this Suns team down at what is it now, PHX Arena? Not even the footprint anymore.
Yeah, what's up with that?
I was trying to, if I had Photoshop, which I don't, and I don't want to waste my time with that, I was going to try and like Photoshop Valley Sports Plug Arena onto the formerly Footprint Center. I wonder wonder how much the going rate is these days.
Oh, it's probably ridiculous. It's probably ridiculous, but looking at this story here. So, I mean, I know I was always saying, I've said it multiple times, you know, Kevin Durant's not going to be that vocal leader. He leads by example. So it's Devin Booker. This is his team. Look through all the seasons that he went through where he was playing on terrible basketball teams. He stuck it out. This is Devin Booker's team, and there's no doubt about it. So then you got a first-year head coach coming in telling the franchise player, the superstar in the city, to tone it down, to basically shut up. That's not a good look. So it tells you a couple of things. Granted, we'd all love to be a fly on the wall or on the floor or on that clipboard in that huddle or in Budenholzer's office when this conversation allegedly occurred. It's does Budenholzer have control of this team? Or is he struggling trying to coach two superstars in Kevin Durant and Devin Booker? I mean, it obviously there's something going on if this story comes out and the head coach is telling a star player to basically shut up.
Yeah, I think it's hard to say, right? Because when things are going bad, you have the negative reports coming in left and right, and you got to sift through what's legitimate and what is just speculation. And in this day and age, in how journalism and the standards have just fallen through the floor, where you can have sources close to the organization, sources familiar with their thinking. You never really know how trusted the source is coming from. And you hope guys, like I think it's Chris Haynes, that's the reporter on here. You hope that the more reputable guys are going to have solid sources that actually have validity to the things that they're talking about. But whether it's true or whether it's not, you never want to find yourself in a situation like this as an organization. And you're right. I mean, what am I trying to say here? I don't envy the situation Mike Budenholzer is in, because he's now the third coach in 3 years. He's having to coach probably easily one of the biggest superstars of the last decade and a half in Kevin Durant, one of the rising superstars in Devin Booker. These guys both played on the Olympic team. These guys have both been all-stars, been to the NBA finals. KD's been there multiple times. So I know Kevin Durant, he knows what he's doing on the basketball court, and he's perfectly capable of being the floor general and helping on the court. But it's also funny at the same time, because we've had Ian on our streams here, who's an avid Brooklyn Nets fan. So he's somewhat familiar with Kevin Durant, and maybe a bit salty, and rightfully so, but he's made the criticism basically saying, like, Kevin Durant's the greatest role player of all time because he doesn't want to step up and be that leader on the court. He just wants to hoop, which, I mean, that's fine, but then someone is going to have to step up and be the leader. And is that Devin Booker? And I think if we're really going back, and, you know, we've had this conversations like this before, but Chris Paul was that leader where he was able to whisper to these guys, get them all on the same page and be that floor general. And it seems like this team doesn't have that right now. Like Kevin Durant and Booker just don't seem to have that same kind of leadership, not maybe leadership mentality, but respect that's like automatically commanded when they step on the court.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to really put an exact, you know, to pinpoint an exact issue when it comes to this team. Yeah, hell yeah. When it comes to this team, and you know, you can't argue that this team's got talent, right? But do they mesh together? And then you look at Budenholzer coming in here. I mean, obviously he's got a really tough job. I mean, first year in town, the expectations for this team coming into the season were through the roof. You got a very, very aggressive new owner of the franchise and a lot of money on the table being spent on this roster where, you know, there's no excuses. We need, you know, you're going to have to come in here and produce and coach this team and, you know, figure something out. And he got our hopes up coming in to start the season, right? We're off to that hot start. Durant gets hurt, and then, you know, we couldn't ever get back to that same point. And it's all just the same shit that we've seen last season, and then just it's not working out. But going back to the comment about him, the coach telling Booker to tone it down. I mean, I don't know if you saw the interview where a reporter asked Booker about that. And you know how Booker does interviews. And I mean, he's very, very short on his answers. And all he basically said was, I talk a lot. So, which is hilarious. But then that something similar to that, if you remember when I forgot who it was it the Salters lady or something about the locker room being toxic? There was a couple days later in a post-game interview with, I think it was Grayson Allen, where she asked a question about the locker room, and Grayson Allen's answer was just, it wasn't toxic. And he said it with a smile and a laugh. So it's, with these type of headlines, I mean, you mentioned it, like journalism, it's like, you know, they're going to take one little thing. That conversation probably went great between Budenholzer and Booker. We never know. And it's that one little journalist trying, I'm not going to call it clickbait, but trying to get, you know, get those eyes on what they're writing about. And the Suns are an easy target right now because there's a lot of storylines and questions. And, you know, I mean, they're a big story, just the disappointment they've been. I mean, they're right there. They're more disappointing than I would say the 76ers. You know, it's a lot of drama that's been following this team when they're just having a terrible season. So,
yeah, I mean, you're right. When you have high expectations for a team, the fall from grace is going to be a lot harder if you go into a season where you're right. In the 76ers, they did have a lot of hype around bringing in Paul George to pair with Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey, and that was kind of going to be their iteration of the big three. But I think 76ers fans were starting to become maybe a little disenchanted with Joel Embiid just based off how often injured he is. So maybe, I think you're probably right there, where the Suns were in the conversation for like being written, not only written into the playoffs, but being like a contender for a deep run and like a true contender for the title, especially with the way the roster was constructed. But I say that with a grain of salt, because here in town, like, we knew that the roster wasn't constructed very great at the start of the season. As far as we knew that the depth questions weren't answered. We weren't going to be fooled like we were last season, because going into the last season, if we go back to the beginning of the 23-24 season, that's when we had just made the move to ship off Paul and bring in Beal. And so it was like, hey, that's a lot of money. Who are we going to build around these guys? And it was Watanabe and Chimezie Metu and all these random guys that nobody had really ever heard of before. And it was like, oh, this guy's going to be great. He's a wing shooter. Oh, this guy's a mad good defender. Like, oh, he's going to lock. Oh, this guy's played with KD before. They have great rapport. And then all those guys sucked. All those guys got shipped off. Like, we ended up getting Royce O'Neal. He didn't save the day. He's been mostly a non-factor. You mentioned, Grayson Allen. Jesus. Yeah. I almost said Jared Allen. I was like, that's not right. Yeah, Grayson Allen, he's hit or miss. I feel like I don't really have any complaints. He does his job. But now, I mean, we talked about it just last week on our Heat Check Live, is now we're getting Bol Bol in the mix. We tried the Yusuf Nurkic experiment. That got sour. We shipped him out. So, I mean, when we're talking about those reports of like the toxicity in the locker room, the reported, you know, toxic whatever, that could have just been coming from guys like Nurkic's camp, where they're trying to stoke the fire. Like, Nurkic obviously wasn't happy. He wanted out. And so they kind of leaked that, and it might not be true. And at the end of the day, I mean, what do you expect them to say though? Right? Like, these reports come out, and like, it's not like Booker's going to be like, yeah, Bud sat me down and I didn't like it. And it completely undermines his coach. It doesn't make him exactly look good. And so you never know. Obviously, you got to take it with a grain of salt. And a lot of these guys, like Chris Haynes, he's going to stand by his reporting. But this was on Arizona Sports. The Phoenix Suns star Devin Booker addressed the recent report by NBA reporter Chris Haynes that claimed Booker had been told by his head coach to tone down his chatter on the court and in the huddle during timeouts to allow the coaching staff's message to be heard. At shootarounds on Sunday, Booker said the relationship between he and Budenholzer is great and the two are on the same page. We've had multiple conversations, Booker said. I can't seem to find one that sticks out more than the others. It's a player-coach relationship. When things start going bad, everybody tries to point fingers to find out what's wrong. People are going to come up with stuff. The relationship is great. We're on the same page. We're trying to win, and that's it. And I mean, I believe him. Like, honestly, Devin Booker is a guy for me that comes across as like a true professional. He's there to go to work and to do his job. And he's also a fierce competitor. Like, anyone who has that fire in them doesn't like to lose, and they're going to express frustration. But it sounds like he's channeling that energy through the proper outlets. Cause I mean, if he were unprofessional, and it goes back to what I was just saying, if he was unprofessional and he really let his emotions get the best of him, had that Haynes report been true, he could have just come out and pitched a fit and been like, yeah, he did. I didn't like it. Things are going bad and it's all Bud's fault, and I'm going to be seeking a trade this offseason. But he didn't do that. So I don't know, man, but That's why we get the questions of like what we're going to do this off season.
Oh yeah. And I mean, you nailed it. What do you expect Booker to say about that? And I mean, only not everyone's going to do the Jimmy Butler move and just totally shit all over the place on his way out. Something that you could maybe have thought Kevin Durant would have done, because I think Kevin Durant's going to get traded this offseason. I mean, it's, you said it, that's at the top of the list of very possibly going to happen in the offseason, because I mean, this experiment's probably over. So it's time to tear it down, blow it up, and rebuild. You know, there's people, I mean, we said it before, there's people talking about even getting rid of Booker, but it's, I don't know. I mean, it's, if you're doing a rebuild, I mean, do you have to get a new coach? I mean, you have to start fresh, right? Completely. Are we another 1 year coach down again? I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's a great question.
That's the $1 million question, is because and this might be a hot take that I'm, you know, just kind of coming to the realization of, because that is that, you know, those are the two glaring questions. Do you trade Kevin Durant? And if so, what are you trying to get back? And two, do you fire Mike Budenholzer? You would be firing your third coach in 3 years and going on to your fourth coach in 4 years. I think they need to stick it out. That's my hot take. I think they need to stick it out, keep the big three intact, because Beal's not going anywhere. Beal's not fucking going anywhere. He's going to leech every last dollar he can out of his team. So if you trade Durant, I think you get worse. I don't think you're going to be able to get two or three solid pieces to go alongside Beal and Booker. And you only have 1 year left on his deal anyway. So let him finish out the last year of his deal, become a free agent after that, and then it clears up the cap. I know you want to get something in return maybe and not just let him walk. But again, that's even more to the point, is there's only 1 year left on his deal. How much are you going to be able to get back in return? At best, maybe some draft picks. And I know that's been a big point of contention, is, oh, the Suns don't have any draft picks. They need to get draft picks. But if we're supposed to be in a contending window right now, we don't need young rookies coming in. We need proven commodities that are going to be able to help us win now.
You don't think they could get a package of first-round picks for Durant? I mean, come on, he's still producing. I mean, what's he averaging per game? 26.7 points per game. I mean, and, dude, he's playing minutes too. I mean, each game he's been playing well over 35 minutes. So this would be – so say he continues on that track for the rest of the season. Do you trust him another year older to still be at that productivity? Where it's like right now, it's okay, he's got a whole season that you can look back on, and he had a good, well, he's having a good season. I mean, statistically wise, I mean, it's a team sport. If you don't win, if you don't make the playoffs, then it's not a good season. But from a personal standpoint, he's still productive. There's got to be a handful of playoff contending teams that might be like, boom, let's go for it. Let's take the shot. Cause I mean, I know you said you don't want to give up on it yet. Why not stick it out? Because you're already in the hole. But is Ishbia willing to do one more season of this and pay the $200 million plus whatever it is in luxury tax to try this again, when I think we've already tried enough? And I think it's time that, you know, you rip the Band-Aid off. You give up. I think the window is closed. You know, and then you get what you can get from for Durant when he's still – at a premium.
Yeah, no, I hear that argument, and I think it's not an easy decision to make. I mean, because you're right, I think that is basically the best we could hope for, is to get some draft picks. But then at that point, you are waving the white flag. You're saying, we're not a contender, we're rebuilding. We have to tough out this Beal contract until he's at the end of it. And so what, is Booker just going to stay around and get older while all that goes on? I mean, if you're doing that, you might as well trade Booker too and really start stockpiling these draft picks. If you're doing a full teardown rebuild, like, let Booker go contend somewhere if you're not going to build a team right here to help him contend now.
Yeah, and I think that's the argument that you're hearing. A lot of the reports and a lot of the stories are coming out where people are like, dude, this didn't work. Tear it down, blow it up completely. Start over. This, start the clock back. You know, it's, you know, try this again. You know, it's, I mean, that's a very solid point. If you're gonna, because you gotta think about, if you trade Durant, how will that make Booker feel? Obviously, if you trade Durant and you try to replace him with some rookies you draft and with those picks or whatever you get in return, I mean, you're showing Booker that you're not trying to be competitive. And then you just went on about how he's got that competitor mentality where the dude wants to win. I mean, he's the last, was it 3-4 seasons, the Suns have had high expectations, and he's been right where he wanted to be, and he fooled everybody. Oh, no one's ever going to go to Phoenix to play with Booker. And then boom, look what happened. We had Durant come here, and then of course the Beal debacle, but you had two big players come here to join him to try to play for a championship in Phoenix. So if that would be another thing I'd be afraid of, is if you do trade Durant, is I'd be afraid that you're going to piss Booker off. And at what point is enough enough? And at what point do you say, you know what, I'm done with this. I'm going to go elsewhere. I'm going to request a trade. Cause I think Booker's booked up for what, the next three, four seasons, I think.
Yeah.
Contract wise. Like yeah. So,
and then I don't think, he doesn't strike me as a guy who just cares about the money, but if he sticks out that contract with us, he's due for a massive, massive, yeah. massive payday.
Yeah. It's a fascinating scenario that we are in right now as Phoenix Suns fans. And honestly, I don't think there's not a perfect answer or solution. And it sucks just sitting here watching the Warriors, who are now 8-2 since the deadline, since acquiring Jimmy Butler, and just wondering what could have happened to this team, to this lineup, if they had that infusion of Jimmy Butler in the middle of it. Which I know it's so easy to sit here and say that, oh shit, I wish that was the Suns. But you could really argue the Warriors were just down as bad as the Suns, and the Suns have a more talented roster than I would say the Warriors do. So just it's so just terrible that didn't work out. But obviously we're in that situation. Yeah, look at that. They're 33-28. They were not doing so hot. And then I believe 8-2 since the deadline is a correct stat for them. So they're playing with a new energy after that acquisition of Butler.
Yeah, I mean, you see there, they're 8-2 in their last 10. So that's – you're right. Like, could that have been different? But would the Suns have found that same success? Because they probably would have had to give up Kevin Durant in that scenario because Beal wasn't going anywhere. I mean, going back just a little bit, like, I see what you're saying. And, like, that is a concern of mine, too, as far as would moving off of Kevin Durant make Devin Booker feel some type of way? Would he be upset by that? Because I think he does enjoy playing alongside Kevin Durant. However, there has been the speculation already swirling. And again, I think we talked about this a little bit last week, where has the arrival of Kevin Durant been detrimental to Devin Booker's game? And you'll never hear Devin Booker admit that. And he might not even recognize it, but there is no denying that it's much easier for him to defer to Kevin Durant out there as the primary scorer and the go-to guy than it was before Kevin Durant, when you had Chris Paul, DeAndre Ayton, the whole bunch. Booker had no problem being the go-to guy and being the most clutch player on the floor. And I think he's still capable of doing that. I think just probably off seniority and pedigree and the amount of accolades, however you want to phrase it, he will defer to Kevin Durant to take the big shots and to be the guy that is leaned on for the scoring burden. And so Booker's still, I think, trying to maybe figure out, and it's crazy to say now two and a half seasons in, that he's trying to figure out how to play alongside Kevin Durant, but it's been a revolving door of characters and role players. So that's why I say, if Ishbia is willing to do it for one more year in the second apron or whatever, to try and run it back, it gives these guys a full offseason. The head coach, the main three guys, they can all four go on a retreat or something, spend a whole week together, watch all the films, say, hey, what went wrong? How can we make it work with the guys we have? These are our biggest issues. Lazy on defense, too many turnovers, lack of direction on offense. Mike Budenholzer is supposed to be the offensive guy. So that if you're slacking on defense, you better make sure that the offense is A1. And it hasn't been. So that's my pitch for running it back, is just, hey, it's only been one season. You didn't have a full offseason. You have a whole year of footage now to see what can we do? Can we make this work? And at the end of it, Kevin Durant walks, you free up all that cap space. You're no longer in the second apron. Obviously, the downside is you got nothing in return. You don't have any draft picks to show for it. You win some, you lose some, right? But again, you also bring up a good point, not going too far back, but does Kevin Durant being 37 years old, how much of a decline is he going to have? I think my only concern, not so much with his ability, but his durability. I think he's still going to be a solid shooter. I think he's still going to have his length and be able to make some plays on defense. He might be a step slower and he might miss a few more games. That's not too bad. I can live with that if Booker can figure out his role playing alongside Kevin Durant. And I can't even worry about Bradley Beal anymore, Cody. I don't care about Bradley Beal. He could go sit on the bench and keep it warm for all I fucking care. But then at the same time, because we're thinking out loud here. We're VSP Live. This is what we do. You're not going to have Tyus Jones next year. He took a small deal to be with us this year. But at the same time, he's kind of fallen off, and we don't really talk about Tyus Jones anymore. I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe we move off Kevin Durant, see if we can get another, get a 2-for-1, get a player and some picks.
You can't run it back next year with the same cast of characters. And what I mean by that is the depth. I mean, you need better. Come on, Richards and Plumlee at center is not the answer. I mean, granted, I know aside from, what is it, two centers in the league, I don't know if you can add Embiid to that list anymore. I don't think he can play basketball anymore. But the center position is not as, that big of a deal as it used to be in, the old days. But come on, I mean, you're rolling out Bol Bol. You can't go into the season starting Bol Bol. I mean, he's got to have more of a 15 to 20 minute off the bench type role, not starting. Granted, he's had some good scoring outputs, right, in the past couple of games. But I don't know if you watched any of the last game, but dude, they're not just one player away. They're not just Bradley Beal playing like a $50 million player like he should be, what he's paid to do. They're not just that away from being one of the top five teams in the league. It's just, it's tough. Look at those top three. It's tough. And
look at those names too. It's such a steep drop off of names. Obviously here in the Valley, we know this, but if I'm in fucking Minnesota and I'm looking at this roster after Grayson Allen and maybe Royce O'Neal, I'm like, oh, Cody Martin. I kind of heard of him a little bit when he was with the Heat. Oh, Micic, don't know him. Nick Richards, don't know him. Ryan Dunn, never heard of him. Oh, Damian Lee, wasn't he on the Warriors one time? Mason Plumlee, I thought he retired. Monte Morris, wasn't he in a band in the 90s? Like, you don't know these people because they're no names, dude. You nailed it. Like, that's it. That's it. They're not one player away. They're a whole fucking roster away.
Yeah, it's gross that they have the highest payroll, but it's very obvious why. Just look at those top three names. That's why. And Bradley Beal, I mean, he's been a little better the past couple of games we've had a couple games where the big three are both in the 20s scoring 20 points. But I mean, for the majority of the season, you can argue that Bradley Beal hasn't produced, statistically based on what he's paid to do. He's not producing like Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant deserves every $50 million of that. Same with Devin Booker. But it's just, I don't know. I feel bad just attacking Bradley Beal. So the only thing you can hope for, it's like the Jordan Montgomery mentality with the Diamondbacks. You're stuck with him. He's going to be on your team next year. You just hope that he's got some type of chip on his shoulder, some type of resurgence where he comes out and says, you know what? Fuck this. I'm going to ball it again like I used to, like I know how to. So, but even then, I don't know. It's just the depth on this team is just not there, like you already said. And then the Ryan Dunn situation still just baffles me. Somebody who struggled to shoot in college, I think what he played for Virginia was historically recently a defensive team where, you know, his big knock coming in the draft was he didn't have a good jumper. He comes in, he gets drafted by the Suns, end of the first round. And then all you hear is him just working continuously on his shot, on his shot. He comes out to start the season where he was shooting a bunch. He was playing all the time. Now, after he got a little bit injured, he's just riding the bench playing 5 minutes. I mean, it's a confidence standpoint, right? Somebody who didn't have confidence in college, now how do you think he's going to do in the pros now? You know, it's just this season, that part just totally baffles me. You're not getting a lot of production that you expected from Royce O'Neal that we tend to get from the 3-point line last season. I mean, Grayson Allen being the best 3-point percentage shooter last year, I mean, he's not shooting the ball anymore. It's just Tyus Jones. I mean, come on. We were stoked. We got a point guard. Holy shit, we got a point guard. How come he doesn't play point guard for this team?
Yeah, what happened? In the beginning of the season, he was getting minutes.
He was.
I remember Mike and I, when we were still doing the pre-recorded recaps, I was saying that I wouldn't be surprised if Tyus Jones averages a double-double, 10 points, 10 assists, because he's going to be – we needed a point guard that bad where we're like, yo, just have a true point guard and he'll have all this opportunity to pass. Came out the gate amazing. And then just such a steep fall off. And I think that is a big thing, is like this team has no identity, right? Like it changes week to week. And I get that you got to try different things and you got to see what works. But man, like I see Bol Bol in there and he's what, 7'6" or some shit? He's fucking huge.
I think he's 7'4". Is he 7?
Oh, I don't know, actually.
Oh, it's my phone's not fucking loading.
Here, I got it.
Oh, he's 7'3".
7'3", okay.
220, that's a Gumby ass weight right there.
Yeah. Well, and that I think is probably why what I was about to say is I see Bol Bol jacking up 3-pointers. He has like 6 or 7 attempts in a game. And so it's like, all right, you got this size. Obviously Bol Bol height wise is a center, but physique wise has to play power forward or small forward. The 3 and the 4, I know those names and those positions don't mean much in the current NBA, but you expect him to play big. But yet when he's on the offensive end, he's playing out on the perimeter. So are we a team that's just going to try and shoot you out of the building and have a lot of 3-point shooters? I don't think so. We don't have guys that can knock it down consistently enough. Are we going to mid-range you to death? We see Kevin Durant do that, take hard contested shots, and he's really good at it. But if we're trading 2s for 3s and the other team's getting fouls and we're not, like, that's not sustainable. It seems like, and again, I cut Tallman, I hate to keep going back to it, but that's my thing about giving him one more season, is figure out your identity, figure out the type of team you want to be with the roster. But now I'm conflicted, because you're right, because they aren't one player away. And I don't think there are any, there's one, not enough wiggle room. And two, who's out there that we could even bring onto this roster in the offseason, free agency or otherwise?
Well, you got to remember where they are financially cap wise. I mean, they're handcuffed. Even if there's the best free agent, like you can't fit him in here. He doesn't work. I mean, how the roster is constructed, it might just be a puzzle that's impossible to solve. And you were crossing your fingers, hoping that Budenholzer would come in here and solve that puzzle. But I mean, obviously he's shown he can't. He's trying. Bradley Beal to the bench, not playing Ryan Dunn, Bol Bol starting. Nick Richards not playing in the second half of games. I mean, he's trying to work and play this chess match, but he's never going to win. I don't think it's possible with this roster. It's just, I mean, the saying, he's trying to throw something at the wall, anything at all he possibly can scrounge together to chuck at the wall and trying to see if anything sticks that might produce wins for this basketball team. And it's just not happening.
And that's what it seems like. I mean, just trying to capture lightning in a bottle. Like maybe someone will step up and they'll start doing good. We're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about it. We're going to beat the horse to death. We're going to beat it until it's paced. And I could rant about the Suns all night. And it's funny, we went from not wanting to talk about the Suns to being 35 minutes into our stream and we're still talking about them. But I did want to look at the standings here one more time, because there was some breaking news last night bleeding into this morning. Kyrie Irving will miss the rest of the season with, I believe, a torn ACL. Anthony Davis is already out for the year. Of course, they traded Luka Doncic for Anthony Davis, if you've been under a rock and didn't know that happened. So Dallas is pretty much fucked. I would expect them to start going on a tremendous losing streak here and not be competitive. So that kind of opens a window for that 10th seed in a lot of ways. And it's crazy we're still four games back of the play-in, 22 games back out of first place. So not even close there. But honestly, I mean, look at how tight it is from the 6th seed to the 10th seed right there. You're talking 1.5 games. So it's a very tight race. We have a game against the Clippers tonight that Mike's at. We just lost to Minnesota. We have to start winning those games. The Spurs were a team that people were talking about as possibly being, you know, a dark horse for that play-in spot. But now with Wembanyama out for the season, I think those hopes have probably gone out the window, if I had to guess. Although they do have that exciting rookie, I think it Castle. I forget what his first name is, but
yeah, like Stephen Castle.
Something like that. Yeah, but I don't think him and Chris Paul are going to be able to carry this team to a playoff spot. And Portland, we know Portland's problems. They have a DeAndre Ayton problem, but
they're kicking ass, man.
Yeah, with our guys too, because they got Kamara too. We talked about that last week.
Yeah. I mean, shit. Didn't they beat the Suns when they played?
Yeah, I believe so. Let me see. Oh, I don't have
any. Anyway, yeah. So I mean, I'm not. Come on.
I know they've beaten them this season for sure. I don't know about recently, but no, yeah, we lost back to back.
Back to back. That's great. Yeah.
Yep.
So I don't know, man. It's just the disappointment of this team not being able to beat the bottom feeders. And then it's like, God, why can't we be in the Eastern Conference? Because the Eastern Conference is such trash. But you mentioned the Dallas Mavericks. Dude, could you imagine being a Mavericks fan right now? Oh, I guess. At the end of the day, if you're a Suns fan, you're disappointed with the season. At least you're not a Dallas Mavericks fan. And then you saw they announced they're going to raise season ticket prices by like 8 or 9%.
Yep.
And then, oh, Kyrie tears his, was it meniscus or something?
Yeah, meniscus, ACL, something. Yeah.
So I don't know. Man, that's some tough shit. Tough shit. But yeah, look at us. Right aligned with the Portland Trailblazers.
Man, if you asked me at the beginning of the season, I would have told you that I know it's going to be ugly. I know it's going to be bad. Did not think it was going to be this bad. Because I was like, I remember us having conversations here like, oh, I mean, they'll make the playoffs. It'll probably, you know, play in probably. Hopefully not, though. Hopefully they can get that fifth or sixth seed. I mean, none of us were delusional enough to think that they were going to run the West or even be a top four, top three, four seed. But I don't know anybody who saw them being on the outside looking in with 21 games left in the season. If you count the game tonight, there's 21 games left. So, Tallman, before we move on, stop talking about the Suns. With 21 games left, four games outside of the play-in spot, I guess 4.5 games outside of the play-in spot, and everything we just said about the Mavericks, what do you think, how good do you think the chances are that we actually make it just through the play-in?
Man, it's hard to bet on this team right now. I mean, you with that, with the whole situation with Dallas, I mean, you would, you know, logically thinking, you would think that injury to their best player on their team that's available is going to result in them not winning as many games, right? So if, I don't know, I think we definitely have a shot. I mean, come on. If we can't make the 10 seed, I mean, that's the play-in is how pathetic would that be if we miss the play-in? So, I mean, with this, I'm not going to call it a golden opportunity. It's not a golden opportunity, but if you have the Mavericks kind of sliding, I mean, we got a chance, absolutely. But it's what this team has proven to us is every single game, no matter who we play, whether it's a team with a good record or a team with a bad record, it's not given. And every team that we play, it's a tough ass game. So this, something's really got to change, and it's going to be some hard fought wins to get it just to the, not even to the ninth, just into the 10th seed.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, If I did not look at the schedule, I'd say I think we have a pretty good chance of at least making the play in. But we talked about it. This is one of the tougher schedules down the stretch here, and you gotta beat the Clippers tonight. You're gonna lose to Denver probably. You gotta beat Dallas because you're trying to take their play in spot. You're gonna lose to Memphis. You should beat Houston, but you'll probably lose that one. You should beat Sacramento. That could be a toss up. You're gonna lose to LA. You should beat Toronto. Toronto's one of the worst teams in the East, and they just beat you. So you got to get redemption against them. You've already beaten Chicago recently in Chicago, so hopefully you can do that. But then this stretch here at the end of March, man, lost to Cleveland, lost to Milwaukee, lost to Boston. You're going to lose to Minnesota again. You got to play the Rockets again, so you'll probably split these Rockets games. You'll lose to Milwaukee. You'll lose to Boston. You'll probably lose to New York and Golden State and Oklahoma City, and then maybe you can finish out the season with a couple of wins if you're lucky.
That might not be enough.
We're talking. I just gave like 5 or 6 wins for the rest of the season out of the 21 games we have left. And you're right. I mean, if we're already 4 games back and we're talking about only winning 6, we're praying to God that the other teams that are above us don't win any more games. I think it's impossible. I think, and that's the shittiest thing, right? Because we're going to be a lottery team that doesn't own our lottery pick. Can you imagine? Can you imagine if the Suns get the Suns get the number one overall pick and whoever the fuck it belongs to? Let me pull up Tankathon. Let's see who that belongs to. Because that would just be that. Wouldn't that be such an Arizona sports thing to happen?
Oh, it'd be icing on the cake for this season.
Oh, I don't want the mock draft. I want the.
Yeah, that. That's a rough finish to the season.
Yeah, that schedule is just absolutely crazy.
Yeah, Boston twice, Milwaukee twice.
Oh, so Houston has our pick.
Houston has it, yeah. They have like all of our picks, don't they?
Yeah, pretty sure they have a ton.
Yeah, they got them from... No, I don't. I'm not going to try to fucking pretend I know who they got them from.
They probably got it from all over the place. But last thing, just to show, I they have this draft lottery simulator thing on Tankathon. They had us down at 11, but I just hit sim lottery and it shows the Suns getting the 4th pick.
The 4th.
So, I mean, I only know Cooper Flagg on this list of mock draft stuff. I mean, the last few college classes haven't really impressed me, and
well, it's mostly been foreign players.
Yeah,
I mean, last draft, like the top 10 was like 80 or 8 of the 10 were like foreign. Or I shouldn't say foreign; they're from overseas.
Foreign. Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, it was like the last four MVPs have not been Americans. And it's probably going to keep up that way because do you know Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is Canadian?
What's crazy? I just learned that like 2 weeks ago and I was like, huh, I did not know that. But yeah, I mean, he just recorded his fourth 50-point game of the season and no other player has more than one. So I think I'm sure his odds to win the MVP this year are pretty good on all the sports books. I think you're muted, bud.
Are you saying that in this season, no other player has more than one 50-point game?
That's what I heard. No one has multi 50-point games except for him. He just had his fourth.
Gotcha. Okay. That's crazy. I think he's probably a good chance that he'll get the MVP nod. But hard to say. I'm pulling up this next story here because I think it's time that we move on and we talk about the Arizona Cardinals.
Woohoo.
And you know what we got to talk about. This story broke last week. What was it, on the 26th? So that was last Wednesday. So a day after we did our live stream. I'm sure Mike would have loved to be here for this conversation. I'm sure we will have conversations about this on our in-person we do later this month. But the 2025 NFL Players Association report cards has the Cardinals looking like dog shit once again. And it's not the Player Association's fault. It's strictly the Cardinals. I mean, I'll just go for the audio-only listeners. I'll just run down this list real quick. You got treatment of families, D plus, food and cafeteria, D minus, nutritionist, dietitian, B, locker room, F minus, training room, D minus, training staff, C, weight room, F, strength coaches, C plus, team travel, B, head coach, A, ownership, D minus. So cool. They like John Gannon. They get their own private jet. So they like the travel of the private jet. But what's funny is they get a B and you're thinking like, oh, that's not that bad. That's pretty good. But they're 20th out of 32 still. So, I mean, team travel is decent, but there's 19 teams that are better. But that's not really where my concern is, right, Tom? And my concern is with the having the worst locker room in the league, having the worst training room in the league, and being second to last for training staff, weight room, and strength coaches. Like, the things that matter when you talk about not only just keeping players here that are happy, because players get drafted here and they don't have a choice, but how are you going to attract free agents if they pull up this report card and see, oh, this team sucks at everything and it's fucking hot. Why would I want to go to Arizona? And they have a losing culture. They have a loser owner. They have an old stadium. Like, everything sucks about this place. And their quarterback is 5'2". I mean, give me a break, man.
Come on, man. 5'2".
I'm sorry, Kyler. That was an unnecessary stray that you just got there.
Yeah. No, it's what sucks. Okay, so first off, this is great. This is what, the third year they're doing this. I mean, it's awesome that they're doing this because it forces some of these, I was going to say shitty owners that are maybe in it not to win, just to make money, it forces them. It puts, you know, everyone gets to see this and it forces them to invest in their team, to invest in their facilities, to invest in the team's family members and just overall of the franchise. So it's great. It's great that they're doing this. What sucks for us is, this report card comes out, we're the worst team. We're 32 out of 32. If I think overall, all of our grades together, Cardinals ranked the last and out of all 32 teams in the NFL. And I want to say last season, I don't think we were last. I think we were 31st. We were either last or second worst. I don't remember, but this is the second year in a row where we're leading up the back end of this report card overall for the NFL in this survey. And it's finally, they announced that they're going to do something about the training facility, where there's a lot of the weight room, the training facility, there was, you know, complaints that it was too small. If you've ever driven by Warner and Hardy, that intersection where the facility is at, I mean, it's been there since 1990, 1991. It's an older building, so it's about time they get something new coming in. So there's no surprise there. At least we got the B plus on the team travel. I don't know if you saw, if you read it in the report card. I think the Patriots got an F, and there's all these reports that their team plane still has ashtrays in all the team, which is hilarious.
I believe it. I mean, the team, like we talk about the Cardinals owning their team plane, the Patriots owning their team plane. I think there's only a handful of teams that do own their own plane, but it's not like the other teams are flying commercial. Like, they have private jets that they're just renting out to get to wherever they're going. So that, honestly, hey, I mean, the cost of maintaining your own plane versus just renting out a private jet for what, seven, eight, nine games a season. I think that might be the way to go. But it's funny, like, I'm looking at a lot of these categories because they have the comparison for the 2024 report card, and somehow we got worse or stayed the same in a lot of these categories. Like, somehow we started treating families worse. We went from the 19th to the 29th. Food and cafeteria went from a D to a D minus, so that got worse. Our dietitian got a little better. Locker room got worse. It's crazy. I mean, you're right. It is funny, the timing where this report card comes out and a day later they're like, oh, no, new training facility, don't worry. And they can say they had it in the works, and they probably did. I mean, these types of announcements don't just come out of thin air. But I did want to share this tweet from a guy you might know Chris Patrick at VSP underscore MFC on X.com.
Chris Patrick.
He wrote a story in two parts. Michael Bidwell is the worst owner in the NFL, a complete joke, and only cares about lining his pockets. Cardinals fans deserve better. So here's part one of the story. Bidwell, first season of premium casita seating at Cardinals games, incredibly successful. And then the second part of the story is the dog shit report card that would have you grounded for a month if you came home to your parents with this.
Longer than a month.
That's like, you're not graduating. With those grades, you're not graduating. You're going to have to do night classes, online school. You're going to have to repeat. I don't even know, man. Like, the fact that Bidwell can go on Newsmakers Week, the worst week in Arizona sports radio, and say that, oh, the casita seating, it was incredibly successful. I have not met one person who's like, dude, the casitas are really awesome. I love that they've added that. That's such a great part of the stadium. Like, it's almost like the Hunger Games. All of us are in the stands in our normal seats looking at the people in the casita seats and talking about, like, do you know those are $30,000 to rent out? And so it's just the fucking rich people enjoying their time, probably a lot of people from out of town. But it goes exactly to what you had just said, is that some of these owners don't care about winning. They only care about making a dollar. And fuck, man, if Michael Bidwell isn't the epitome of that, I don't know what is.
Yeah, and it sucks because, I mean, you think about what that renovation costs to put in all those casitas. And it's like, okay, well, you're over here scoring all these D's and F's. Like, why can't you put that? Why that money is probably best served in some of your other facilities and amenities for your players to make the Arizona Cardinals, you know, somewhere where free agents and players want to be, right? I mean, sorry, I was dying when you're like, somehow we're treating families worse. Like, year to year, they're like, fuck them kids, man.
Fuck your family. Only one guest.
Yeah. 12 months later, actually, fuck them. But no, all jokes aside, I mean, it's, and then, I mean, it tells, right? Because, I mean, you look at that, the grade for the owner. I mean, it's very easy to be critical of billionaires. I mean, how did they become a billionaire? By doing all this stuff, right? By putting in casitas and not building a new team facility. The team facility cost him money. The casitas make him money. So that's from a business standpoint, makes sense, right? As a businessman, you can't, but it goes into that culture. You look at why our head coach got an A, and you look at why our owner did he get a D minus or something? Shitty grade.
The coach or?
The owner.
Oh, was that part? Was the owner a grade? Oh, ownership got a D minus, 30.
D minus, yeah. 30, so yeah. It's the culture of the team, right? So, I mean, it's the ownership can play a part into the culture, right? Do you have a winning culture? I mean, I mean, look at what the Patriots did for so many years. They had a winning culture there. I mean, some of these grades that you're seeing, I mean, it ties it. So with the ownership, you say, okay, how did they grade the ownership? I mean, how much does he invest in the team? How much does he want to win? I mean, Bidwell is one of the owners where he left cap room on the table. He didn't spend all the money that he could spend last season. He left 25, 30 million just chilling. So the players see that and they go, okay, well, the owner's not bought in. So it's could be detrimental to the culture of the team where, you know, I want to go play somewhere where, you know, I can win. And the people around me want to win. And the guy up in the luxury box up top every game who owns the damn building and the jersey I'm wearing, I want him to want to win too. So it's not a line. I mean, God bless Jonathan Gannon, dude. I mean, we're trending in the right direction from the ground up in a sense, right? Where we're building that culture. Gannon's somebody that people want to play for, right? And you just hope that, you know, with this report card, Bidwell figures it out. I mean, there's still legal shit going on with this guy, right? There's still a lot of complaints coming from former employees of him about, you know, just poor treatment and harassment and terrible work environments. It's at one point, does he say, you know what, I'm just going to take a step back, hire a team president, get out of here. Stop trying to be Jerry Jones. You know, granted, he's not trying to be the GM like Jerry, but I mean, it's God bless this report card and this survey, because it gives these players an avenue to be honest with these rich billionaires. I mean, that right there, how embarrassing do you think that's got to be for him, where everybody in the country, everybody in the league, colleagues of his, other owners are seeing, look at Bidwell. I mean, you have the Miami Dolphins over here striking out with A pluses all the way through. I mean, they're just killing it. You know, why can't the Cardinals do something like that? Why can't we have an owner that wants to invest in this team and this culture and its players to win and be successful? And in a sense, you know, recapture the hearts of the city. Because right now, it's been a couple of years since I felt, hey, you know, we have a chance to do this. We have a chance to win. We have a chance to be a top 10 team in the NFL every single season. And it's right now, we're still far off of that. And I think it starts with the ownership, and he's got to do something about these grades, because ultimately he controls every single one of these grades. There's no doubt about that.
Well, yeah. And what you're saying about he should see this report card and it should upset him, and he should try and want to make it better, but it's all about how he reads it. You know, is he going to just double down and be like, no, fuck you, I know that I'm doing fine, I don't care what some survey report card says? You know, you would think, and I would hope, like you're saying, that he would look on this, reflect, and try and be like, man, if this is what the players in our building are saying in an anonymous survey, obviously, if he's, you know, he's not going up to them in the locker room and be like, do you really think that we have the worst training room in the league? And he's not going to. So he needs to reflect. And I do agree with what you're saying. Like, you become a billionaire, you become a multimillionaire by making successful business decisions. And I'm not someone who hates capitalism. I don't hate. I get that it's part and parcel with the American dream. But I think there is a way to be an ethical capitalist, where, I know it sounds kind of stupid when we're just talking about sports and sports teams as far as that goes, but it does kind of tie into like what you're saying about his ongoing litigation that he's dealing with and how he treats his employees. That's part of it. But then the second part of it, in a sense of sports and this football team, is how is he treating his fan base? And I'm not talking on a personal level. I'm talking about putting a winning, entertaining product on the field on every Sunday. And if this team was winning, if we were winning 10 games and making the playoffs every year, you wouldn't hear a peep out of me about casitas. I'd be like, they look cool. Looks like a good time. If I ever have the chance to go, I will. And this is still true. If I ever have the chance to be in the casita seatings, I will gladly accept that ticket.
I will too.
I will go hang out and drink my drinks and eat my free food, and I will absolutely love it. Don't get me wrong. But when the team is so bad, and you are refusing to invest money into the team, and you're just building casitas and you're stacking your cash and you're doing your other business ventures, I'm going to bitch about the casitas, Tallman. I'm going to fucking complain, because it shows me that all you care about is the money. You actually don't care about your fans and the people who actually got you rich. And I get it. I get it. Michael Bidwell is a Nepo baby for all intents and purposes. He inherited this team. He didn't have to work as hard as someone who started from the bottom and worked their way to the top. Doesn't matter. He's there now. And it's, what is he going to do? And it just goes back to this conversation that we always have, is Michael Bidwell's not going anywhere, man. He's not going to sell this team unless he is literally forced to, or he drops dead. And I don't know, does he have a son or another relative, another Bidwell waiting in the wings that might be just as bad as him, that's going to take over? And I'm not wishing death on anybody. I don't want Michael Bidwell to drop dead, but I'm just saying, if someone else takes over this team somehow, if the league makes him sell the team, I don't think that's a bad thing. But I don't think it would have to be something more egregious than the legal troubles we've seen so far. But it's just tough, man.
He's only 60, so
yeah, he is fine.
Wouldn't get your hopes up. I'm just kidding.
But no, like you're also saying, I'll interject real quick and touch on one more point that you brought up, is he isn't exactly Jerry Jones. It's not the one for one comparison where he's being the GM, but if it's still true what we saw in Hard Knocks, he's in the weight room, he's very much involved in the day-to-day. And I think that would benefit him as well if he stepped away from the actual football side of things, focused on the business side, and stayed out of the spotlight and let his coaches coach, let his players play, let Monty Austin Fort do the job to build this team and give him all the money he needs to do it. Build new facilities, build new training and weight rooms, build a new locker room, renovate State Farm Stadium. But he's not even doing one of those things. And I don't care what he says about the pledge on the training facility. That's just a PR stunt, if you ask me.
Yeah, I mean, I hope they're going to do it. I mean, it's like I said, that current one built in 1991, it's 30 years old. No, more than that. Shit. It's very old. So, I mean, it's about time he invests in that shit. But, yeah, I think it comes down to he needs to hire a president, man. I mean, he can't just, oh, I'm the owner. Oh, I'm also the president. Oh, who appointed you as president? I did. Who's Hasselbeck? I am. So it's, I don't know. I mean, he's obviously not like Jerry Jones, but what were some of the grades for the Cowboys on that list? I'm sure they got some pretty good grades on some of their facilities in their stadium, because that place is all their shit's top notch, you know. But him being that, he probably was just with the Hard Knocks. He was probably doing all that for the cameras, you know. This dude he's a showman. He likes to be in front of a camera, and it's very obvious.
Yeah, I mean, for all their troubles, Cowboys 10th overall ranking, 10 out of 32 teams isn't too bad. And they're not even putting a winning product on the field. They treat their families well. Something the Cardinals can't do. Food and dining's good. Everything's good. It's just training room's a little bad. Training staff's a little bad. Everything's pretty good. Ownership, surprisingly, gets a B. That's crazy.
Yeah, look at that. Damn. Maybe Jerry's better.
Maybe. Maybe. Oh. Dang, that sucks, because that's the one thing we had to hold on to is like, oh, at least Michael Bidwell isn't Jerry Jones. But now maybe you got me thinking maybe it wouldn't be so bad.
Well, if there was a GM grade on there where they got to grade the GM, I'm sure the Cowboys wouldn't have had a great grade on that one. Cardinals probably would have had a pretty decent grade, but I don't know. Austin Fort's got to hit some picks here, man.
Amen, dude. Because I mean, I guess that's a good point. Say what you will about Jerry Jones and how involved he is, but that dude wants to win. That dude is willing to spend. He's willing to do what he thinks is the best to win. Now, it seems like he doesn't always make the smartest decisions. I'm not a Cowboys fan, so I don't follow them very closely. But there have been some questionable moves that they've made, and I think gotten a little unlucky here and there. But yeah, man, I don't know. I'm just very curious as we get closer to the NFL draft, which I think is middle to end of next month. When is that? Like April?
Yeah, normally at the end of April, right?
Yeah, April 24th to the 26th.
Where is it this year?
Oh, that's a great question.
Oh, yeah. It's
New Orleans?
No, it's in Green Bay.
Ugh.
That's gross. It's a historic football city. Okay, let's.
I guess. Yeah,
We're both over here about to throw up. This doesn't sound like fun.
Because Green Bay isn't even like that big of a city. Yeah, Green Bay has 105,000 population.
That's not very big.
What is the? To give you perspective, the population of Chandler is 260,000. I'm sorry, 280,000. So Chandler's almost three times the population as fucking Green Bay, Wisconsin. But hey, you're it's right. Crazy. Historic football town. I don't know if they can handle all that tourism that they're about to get. Hopefully they have enough Best Westerns to go around. I don't know, man. Do you see the draft combines going on right now? And Travis Hunter said that he has a harder job than Shohei Ohtani.
What? He said that?
Yeah. Let me see if I can find
that.
Oh,
man.
Hopefully I didn't fall for some clickbait, some NBA Centel.
Yeah. If he thinks if he thinks there's any coaching staff in the league or in this world that's going to let him play both sides of the ball in the NFL, especially if they take him with the top three pick. He's out of his mind. That's not happening. You can't. No. He can't. That's funny, though. That's funny that he thinks he's going to. I'd put money on it right now that he's not going to.
No, there's no. What team would want him to do that? Like,
no, not at all. Nobody. I mean, you might be like, oh, maybe they find different ways to mix him in. Like, remember what the Cardinals did with Patrick Peterson? His rookie season, he, you know, would return the kicks and shit. But then they were like, hey, all right, we need to get serious about this. You're not getting hurt on some dumbass special teams play. So, no, you're just playing defense. So, there's no way that – there's no way. And it's a physical game. I mean, I'm not, you know, trying to talk shit on what Ohtani does. I mean, trying to be a major league pitcher and also be the best designated hitter in the league at the same time is really hard. I'm not saying he's the best pitcher, but he's not terrible. He's not the best, but he's decent. But he's also just so happens he's the best hitter in the fucking league. I'm not saying that is hard to do. But football is just so physical, man. You can't play all 60 minutes on both sides of the ball and get your ass whooped for 17 games. They're going to expand the season. We already know it's going to happen because the billionaires need more money. If you think casitas suck, wait till they get that 18th season game. It's going to happen. Everybody knows it.
Bidwell will haul out the other end zone and build more casitas.
Yeah, right? Fuck, he's going to build them up at the top of the stadium. They're going to be floating.
Yeah, he'll have actual skyboxes. The bottom is just glass, and you can look down on the field.
No, but I did not see him say that about Ohtani. That's funny.
I'm not finding it within this article, but I could have sworn he said it. Weighs in on former baseball. Maybe in Travis's defense. Okay, wait, hold on. Let's pull this up real quick.
I mean, he's a hell of a player.
This is John Boy. What does he say here?
Probably me, what I do in football, because it's a lot on your body. You know, Tony, he's a great player, but you got to do a lot in football.
Fair. Okay.
Absolutely fair.
So
right.
He was set up by the reporter with that question. So I don't blame Travis Hunter. He answered the question that was given to him, and exactly what you said, and I agree. Football is much harder on the body. Football is a sprint. Baseball is a marathon. You know, you play 182 games of baseball, so you have to have the endurance, but it's not as physically demanding on a game-to-game basis. And that's why in football, in theory, you're supposed to have seven games apart, except for when the NFL is stupid and schedules you for three games in 12 days or whatever with their – now they have to have – Monday night football, Thursday night football, Saturday night football, Sunday night football. Pretty soon we'll see Wednesday night football. Like, it just becomes a scheduling nightmare.
It does. But like for Travis Hunter, it's like we're not getting it twisted here. We know he did that in college, but college and the NFL is a completely different game. When you're a receiver in college, especially playing in some of the teams that they played, I mean, we're very familiar. They're in the same division as the same conference as the Sun Devils. I mean, as a receiver, he was probably wide open half the time. That happens all the time in college football. I mean, look at some of these scores and just the offensive output in college football. It's not the same level of defense that he's going to be facing as a receiver. He's going to get hit a lot more and hit a lot harder. And then on the defensive side of the ball, he's going to have to hit people that are a lot bigger, faster, and stronger than he's used to. It's like there's no way in hell, even if he can do it, what team is going to sit there and go, oh, we're going to take you with the top pick, which is absolute gold. I mean, a top three pick is gold in the NFL. We know that. I mean, you're on that rookie contract. You're still making $25, $30 million. What if they want to re-sign you? No one's going to pay you $20, $25 million for you to play every single minute of a football game on both sides of the ball just so you can get hurt. Like, it's not going to happen.
That's okay. So here, since we're going down this rabbit hole, thinking out loud, just being creative. So when Ohtani is pitching and batting, he never does it in the same game. He's not going to pitch and then come up to bat in the same game. I'm pretty sure. Or does he DH?
I can't remember. He hasn't pitched in like two fucking years.
Yeah.
I feel like he did pitching games or hitting games that he pitched.
Maybe right? He did. I guess that's not that crazy because that's how the National League was forever, where pitchers also batted. So I could be wrong there. But also, Ohtani doesn't pitch every night. He pitches every 5 days or whatever. But
and then now the Dodgers they're going to have a 6-man rotation. So he's not even going to be pitching every 5 days.
Right. Right. So not to all of a sudden jump and be all in on what Travis Hunter is saying, but I think he does make a good point. Like the physical demand is huge. However,
yeah, he hit in games that he pitched.
He did. Okay. So I take that back.
Sorry to interrupt you.
No, you're good. But all I was going to say is where I think the whatever team drafts Travis could get creative should they choose to, and it would probably create a roster nightmare, but depending on the matchup, depending on how your roster is constructed, you could do it on a game-by-game basis. Maybe you have a team with a stronger offense where you need Travis Hunter to play defensive back. So that whole game, he's just playing defense. And then the next game, maybe you have a team that's, you know, where you need some more help on the offensive side. So he plays wide receiver in certain games. So not playing both in one game, but on a game-by-game basis, switching the position he plays. Since I'm throwing out the hypothetical, if that was your team, if that was the Cardinals, would you be interested in that, or would you want him to just pick one lane or the other?
No, I'd be interested in having him on my team, absolutely. I mean, the kid is a stud, there's no doubt about it, but no, it's pick one lane, especially when you're playing with the best of the best. It's like who was the guy the Cardinals had? We took him eighth overall. Was it Isaiah Simmons? He can play in the secondary as a safety.
The Swiss Army knife.
Yeah, he can run. No, he couldn't do any of that shit. It's like he just – I mean, I'm sure the raw talent was there, but it's like it's such high stakes where it's – in the NFL where it's – every game matters so much. There's so much money involved where you need to have your position and you need to fucking master it. Because if you don't, there's literally 40, 50 other dudes playing the same position as you on other teams that are fucking mastering it. And you're going to be left in the dust. It's just, I mean, as Ron Wolfley says, you're playing the game at the highest level that this species can produce. So if he's not focusing all of his energy on doing one thing, granted, you could say, I mean, you see it all the time. Who did it last? Was it Deion Sanders, right? He played
the two sport, yeah,
or the two position.
Oh,
was it? Did Sanders played?
I know he played football and baseball. I don't know if he.
No, I meant did he play wide receiver and defensive?
That's a good question. That's a good question.
I think he did. But anyway, I mean, you can argue that he's playing similar styles. Like, oh, I'm either my job is always to catch it. I'm either the one trying to get open or the one trying to cover somebody. So I get how that skill can translate, but I don't know. It's just, there's too much risk in it. The game is too hard. The talent level is just too high that he's got to have to stick. If he wants to be successful, and I mean, I'm not saying he won't be successful. I'm not saying he can't. He probably can do it, but it's just, it'd be hard to convince me that there's a team out there that would say, yeah, we're going to entertain this and we're going to allow him to do it. I'm not saying he can't do it. He probably can, but I don't think that anyone's going to let him.
No, that's a good point. I, it looks like there is precedent for, I guess, I don't know if you would necessarily use this term in football, but like role players, guys that are lower down on the roster, having more of that versatility. There's a guy on the Ravens, Patrick Ricard. I guess he played fullback and also played some defense as well. And interesting fun fact that I'm just now finding is that prior to 1949, players were required to play both sides of the ball. So obviously a lot's changed in 75 years.
That was a different sport back then.
yeah, no, without a doubt. But man, this was fun. I mean, it did kind of turn into rants off the top with Chris and Tallman, and we just kind of like went in. So not bad, man. I mean, we kind of do this. If we had Mike, it would just be a heat check live, but this was fun, man. I mean, is there anything else you want to chat about or go over before we roll out of here?
No. I think I know we didn't want to dive into baseball because we have a big preview stream coming up that I'm stoked for. So yeah, Deion Sanders did play wide receiver occasionally. Occasionally, though.
Oh, okay.
So if he's, I don't know why we just went so hard on this Travis Hunter topic. But he was the first two-way NFL player since the 1960s. So I don't know. I just don't see him playing consistently on both ends. But I had to add that because I seemed very stupid when I said, did Deion do it?
No, that's what it's about. I'm glad you did the research because it makes sense. And I think that could be it. Like maybe they do have him just play wide receiver or just play defensive back and then use him sparingly in that other role. But anybody who thinks that he's going to play every single snap of the game or even the majority of the snap, it's not going to happen. Like physically, I don't think he can do it. Like you see players who just play one side of the ball getting oxygen on the sideline after a big run. And typically those are the bigger bodies.
Those are the linemen. Those are the Josh Naylors.
Yeah. Naylor. No, I'm sorry. I'm not going to do that joke again. I'm not going to do it again.
Oh, dude, that's not going anywhere. That's probably going to get said 1,000 more times this year. It's going to happen.
Easily. It's too easy. Too easy. But yeah, I'm excited for that baseball stream as well. I'm holding back. I'm busting out an oldie but a goodie, a Michael Benjamin quip, chomping at the bit to talk about baseball. Spring training is fully underway, and I'm very excited for this season because it seems like we have a good roster, and if they can recapture some of that 2023 magic, and I think this team could be better than the 2023 team. I already talked about it a little bit last week. Our record last year was better than the year before when we made the World Series. So why not? Why can we not make the playoffs and be a contender this year? I think it's totally in the cards. We'll just have to see. But
yeah. Oh, I was looking at power rankings. I forgot what site it was on, but they had the D-backs number 8 in power rankings.
Ooh, yeah.
But I'm right aligned with you. This might be a better roster than we had last season. And even in 2023, and last season, we had the most runs in the entire league. You lost Peterson, you lose Walker. Peterson and Naylor is a little bit of a downgrade, but just what you did to your pitching rotation, it's all about pitching this season, and it's going to be lights out. So this team's going to be a lot better than last season. I feel really good about it.
Yeah. I'm so excited because if our pitching gets better from last year, it's okay if we take a step back with the bats. Because like you said, they had the most runs last year. I had the runs last year. And we're just...
Dude, I have them right now.
All right, so we better get out of here before you make any more bad jokes and shit the bed.
I'm going to finish this from the toilet.
Right. But super excited about Corbin Burnes. It's going to be huge for this roster. We're going to have another live stream coming for you next week to be determined, but we're going to go live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. So make sure you follow us here on YouTube, Valley Sports Plug, and you subscribe, like this video, share it with all your friends and your enemies too. And follow us on the socials as well at AZ_VSP on Instagram, X, TikTok, and more. I'm Chris Patrick for VSP Tallman and Michael Benjamin. Have fun at the Suns game. We'll see you next time, guys. Peace.